WellSpan York Hospital in Pennsylvania is trying to get a message out to patients who had open heart surgery there during the last 4 years. They may have been exposed to a potentially dangerous bacteria through a medical device that's used to heat and cool a patient's blood during surgery. So far, 8 people are known to have developed an infection and 4 have died after having open heart surgery at the hospital between October 2011 and July of this year. Dr. Hal Baker, who oversees infection control at the hospital, told WGALT that the hospital is in the process of notifying some 1,300 patients, both past and present, who may have been exposed to the bacteria.
Our hope is that we get the message out and that we alert patients and their providers to be on the lookout for anything unusual.
Just under 1% of patients have developed the infection, but again, 4 have died. The Centers for Disease Control, which conducted an investigation, says it's not clear whether the 4 deaths are directly connected to the bacteria, but that it was likely a contributing factor. WellSpan York Hospital says it's replaced the machine since learning about the problem this summer and that there is currently no risk of bacterial exposure from that source at the hospital. Well, tonight, the NBA opens its new season with 3 games, including Derrick Rose and the Chicago Bulls hosting LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Tomorrow, forward Caron Butler will begin his 14th season in the NBA as the Sacramento Kings take on the LA Clippers. As a child, Butler did not dream of becoming a professional basketball player. In fact, he didn't have any hopes for his future at all. It's a story Butler lays out in his new book, Tough Juice. Our colleague Karen Given at NPR's Only a Game hit record and let him tell his story.
I used to always respect these people that came and reached out and took time out their life, their busy life, to talk to me and try to influence and encourage me to do positive things. But at the same time, you did not experience what I experienced. You do not see what I see every time I jump off the porch and I live my life on a day-to-day. Have you ever lost your best friend? Have you ever been shot at? Have you ever shot at someone? Do you know how we feel about you? And do you know how they feel about me? I grew up in Racine, Wisconsin. You know, everybody was a little hard on for cash, but everyone made ends meet. I had role models. Wasn't positive role models. People that wore flashy jewelry and gold chains and drove around in fancy cars and had the women and, you know, sold drugs. My mom, you know, even when she wasn't working in the shift she's supposed to be sleeping, she still was up raising me, my baby brother as well, working hard, relentlessly, 2 jobs, and to this day, I still don't know how she did it. I had a paper out, you know, I try to make ends meet, try to buy the newest shoes and the newest outfits and stuff like that so I can be fresh, but I just felt like the paper out wasn't enough. I started selling drugs. I was easy 11 or 12 years old. I picked up my first pack. I was out in the streets and making moves, making sales, trying to build my clientele, make my mark, and, you know, get as much money as fast as I can. People was dying, you know, so often, and it was, you know, shootouts even more often. So, you know, you had to protect yourself. I grew up in, you know, dare and hang tough and take a bite out of crime and all that too. But at the same time, this is what my future holds anyway. Like, I don't see anything outside of this. And the people that I do see that's working are working extremely hard, like my mother's working. So I took the risk. I was always taller than the other kids. I still stand at about 6'6", 6'7". I've been this height since probably about 9th grade, 8th grade. You know, basketball was just, you know, a pastime. I didn't look years down the road. I was just trying to survive that minute, that next hour, that next second. Like, I didn't look to the future like that. I remember that morning arriving to Case High School, and I saw the ATF come in the classroom, and I looked around, and, you know, we had the windows that kind of didn't slide all the way open, so I couldn't jump out or anything. We was on the second floor. You know, they apprehended me, they handcuffed me, and they told me that they had found a gun in the locker and some cocaine as well. You know, a lot of times before, it was more hearsay. But this time, I was caught red-handed with everything, and I was just stuck. I ended up in Ethan Allen Correctional Facility. I went to the hole. It humbled me. You know how you can just be humbled and just continue to be humbled before you just finally get the message? Because people always say, like, what is the one thing that happened that just changed you? I don't think it was one thing, but it all hit me at one moment. And I think that was when I was in solitary confinement. For 23 hours a day, I had to sit there and just think about how much of a disappointment I was to my mother, my family, and what I needed to do to get back on the right track. You know, when people see me coming, they see trouble. Like, how can I change that? So when I got out, I tried to do everything positive that I could possibly do. Enroll in school, get in school, try to get a job. Anything good that I could possibly do, that's what I was doing. I went to a huge tournament, and then we come back, I'm just getting all this high praise. They like, man, you know, you averaged 30 points against some of the best players, and they was like, man, he's going pro. And that's when the thing just really start clicking, like, you can have an opportunity to, you know, make a living playing basketball. Like, it's not too far of a dream. Like, you're not reaching out there too far. Like, this can really happen. And that's when I found my niche. You know, I knew I had a gift. I missed 2 years because I was in corrections. Like, my eligibility ran out, so I had to go to prep school. I needed like $5,200 to go to prep school. I went to my mom, I went to my grandmother. They had no money at the time. So it was a guy in the community selling drugs. And I asked him, I just said, you know, I need an opportunity to go to school to get out this environment. He was like, man, I'll help you out. I see you got a gift. I see that you're trying to stay away from these streets. Do this, and when you come back, man, look out for these kids. Come back and show them a better way. Till this day, you know, he just got out of, you know, federal prison. Never asked me for anything in return. He just told me that he's so proud of me. You know, people are, like, more inspired now. They feel like they can do anything. You know, be a doctor, they can be a lawyer, they can have a little adversity early on and still make it out. Because he did it. I know we can do it.
Whoa! Oh, monster slam dunk by Butler, and he's fouled.
The NBA is a sport, it's a game that I love, a game that put me on this platform and brought me unbelievable blessings. But at the same time, what are you going to use your platform for? What is your legacy going to be? What are people going to remember you for? Are they going to remember you for being just this basketball player? Or are they going to remember you for planting all the right seeds? I wanted to plant seeds. You know, we spoke at the Champions of Change at the White House, talking about the bridge between law enforcement and community. It was unbelievable. I mean, a kid that comes from the south side of Racine, inner city, with the background that I have, to be in the White House. Unbelievable. I told my mom, I called her. I said, look, we came a long way. I said, we came a long way. And I can just say hallelujah. She said hallelujah on the phone, hallelujah. I said, we came a long way.
Caron Butler of the Sacramento Kings. His new book is Tough Juice. Our story is from Karen Given of NPR's Only a Game.